You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I know firsthand what it is like to struggle. But I found the cure to binge eating, and now I help people all over the world find food freedom. And on this show, I am here for you too. So today we're going to talk about exercise. Do you like exercising, but you hate the gym? Or do you hate exercising? Maybe you lack the motivation to start a fitness routine, or you find it difficult to be consistent. Juggling a busy lifestyle or traveling can make working out seem impossible. But good news, today my special guest, fitness trainer and coach Daniel Raz, will help you overcome all these hurdles and more. He's going to provide insights, tips, and guidance to help you get to where you want to go. So welcome, Daniel.
Thanks a lot for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. So tell us your story. How did you come to do this work?
Definitely. So I'm from Israel. When I was six, my family and I moved to China, and this was in 2004, so it wasn't very westernized, and you need to realize that Chinese food is very different in China than it is in America. It's not Panda Express, and I was an extremely picky eater, so other than chicken nuggets from McDonald's and hot chocolate, I did not consume anything. So from the age of 6 to 12, I was the worst eater on the planet. However, at the age of 12, I started playing basketball. And my brother convinced me that if I want to get better, I should start eating healthier, which was pretty much any other diet except for what I did. So I started to get more into health, fitness, and trying different foods. And around the age of 17, I realized that I was very confident on the basketball court, but nowhere else. I didn't feel like that confidence translated into everyday life unless I had a basketball with me. So when I started working out more and getting more into fitness, I realized that I take my body with me literally everywhere I go. It's a more transferable skill. And that's how I got more into fitness, nutrition, all of that. So I went to University of British Columbia to be a physiotherapist, actually. However, I always had the passion of personal training. So I still worked at a few gyms. Then in 2020, I think a few of the people in the audience have heard there was a lockdown thing going on. So that was no longer an option. And I explored online training and I decided to not be a physiotherapist, but go full on to being an online fitness trainer. And that's what I do full time now.
Wonderful. By the way, on Instagram, can you guys hear Daniel okay? I know, Randy, you just said that you needed his volume raised. All right. So I am going to talk with Daniel about some questions. If you have any questions, you are free to, if you're on Instagram, just drop them in the comments. If you would like to call and you have a question for Daniel, the number here is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. Feel free to call in and ask him anything about fitness. All right. So I know that you have some, let's say you call them health hacks, right? Yeah. Some hacks. Tell us some of your favorite health hacks that help your clients and people that you know.
Definitely. I believe the biggest thing people struggle with is consistency and motivation. And the reason why they struggle with that is they don't see tangible results. If you see the scale going down, your clothes fitting better week after week after week, you would never want to stop. And the way you do that is by health hacks, or easy wins, things that take little time, little effort, and still move the needle in your favor. So a health hack or an easy win is anything that takes little time and effort. An example is always having a water bottle within arm's reach, right? Mm-hmm. Super easy, doesn't take a lot of, exactly, wonderful that you have that as well. It doesn't take a lot of effort, and being hydrated helps you tremendously have more energy, feel fuller. So many people think they're hungry, but they're actually dehydrated or bored, right? Another example is usually, unless it's a video call, call, if it's a phone call, I'm always standing and moving around. I'm never sitting because I'm going to be talking anyways, might as well move, right? And improving the quality of your sleep. It doesn't take time, doesn't take effort. You just need to know what to do. So different things that don't really take a lot of time or effort, but you know, move the needle in your favor and allow you to succeed no matter what happens. And that way you're more motivated to do the more difficult things.
Those are all great ideas. And I have to say, from personal experience, drinking water is a game changer, because my whole life people have said, and I hate water. People have always been like, drink more water, drink more water. And I was very resistant until in January, I started this strength training program. And they said, you need to drink a gallon of water a day. And I'm like, does coffee count? And they're like, no, it does not count. I started drinking a gallon of water a day. And your hack about that is so on target, because I couldn't believe my energy. So guys, if you are watching this or listening to this, definitely get that water in and put something in it that makes it like taste not like water. If you like me, just hate water. There are things you could put in it that make it taste yummy and so easy. So great, great tips. All right. So I started the show by saying, hey, do you like exercising but hate the gym, or do you just hate exercising? Let's go with the first question. Mm-hmm. What about people who like exercising, they like how it feels, but they hate the gym? What do you tell your clients who are like, dude, I want to get fit, but I am not going in a gym?
First thing I say is you came to the right guy, because none of my clients go to the gym. Right? I'm going to ask a quick question to you, Nina, before I continue. Out of the last 10 movies that you watched, how many of them were at home versus in a movie theater?
Oh, I just saw one. I have seen one movie. No, two movies in the last 2 months. And before that, I had not seen a movie for 3.5 years. So, yeah.
Well, for most people,
at home.
They watch way more movies at home than in a movie theater. And that's because it's a lot more convenient, right? And a lot of people hate going to the gym because they feel like it's an event. They get nervous. They don't want to be around a bunch of sweaty people who don't even clean their machines or wait forever just to be on a certain machine, when you can get the same results at home. A metaphor I love to use is Gordon Ramsay, the famous chef, can make a better meal with one pan than the average person can with 5 pans, because it's not about the equipment you have, it's about knowing what to do. And your muscles only know tension. So if you know how to manipulate the tension, you can get the same results. So when my clients realize that they can work out from start to finish in 20, 30 minutes without traveling, without needing to get changed at any time, they don't need to plan it out or switch the entire schedule whenever it's convenient for them, they realize they're able to get a lot more consistent results. And consistent results is what motivates them to continue, because when you look good, you don't want to stop.
Right. Okay, so you heard that. Every client he trains at home and not the gym. Yeah, because going to the gym, it's such a thing. There's the gym bros, there's the driving there, there's the, as everything you said, the people who sweat and they don't clean off their sweat. That is disgusting. Yep. Ah! Okay, so good to know that it is possible to get fit without going to the gym. But what about those people who say, I want to get fit. I really want to feel strong. I want to lose weight. I want to feel, you know, all the things that why people want to work out. I want the cardiovascular benefits, but I hate exercising. What is your advice to those people?
So to those people, I don't give them a workout to begin with. I first feel I need them to believe me that what I do works, and I need them to see tangible results. Because it doesn't matter what I say, they won't believe anything until they see the number on the scale drop. They won't believe anything until they see the clothes fitting better. So that's why the easy wins are so important. I believe in January 1st, people that have never exercised, have eaten horribly, go from doing nothing to going to the gym for 2 hours a day, drinking 3 gallons of water and eating nothing but lettuce. That's a horrible approach because it's not sustainable. I say, again, let's do the easy wins, small steps that make a big difference. And once you lose a couple pounds, once you see that you can really do this, then I incorporate more exercising. And I do encourage, hey, for the first week, pick 3 times, walk for 20 minutes. That's it. Baby steps, because you need to believe that you can do this.
Okay, so instead of I've got to run a marathon and I've got to get out there and run that 26 point whatever miles, it's, hey, maybe walk half a mile, right? At least you're doing something.
100%. Right? And also in regards to the exercises, obviously, if somebody who's a beginner and is more out of shape than a person who is more advanced, I'll give them different exercises, make it easier for them so they can do it. And a very important point I like to emphasize to my clients, especially when they're starting out, is don't think, did I exercise or did I not exercise? It's how much did I exercise. So it's not binary, it's a continuum. I gave you a 20-minute workout, you have a headache, you couldn't have time for 20 minutes. Do you have 10 minutes? Do you have 5 minutes? You can always do something.
That's such a good point, because so often when people think about exercising, it's this all or nothing. I need to go and I need to go hard for an hour, or it doesn't count. But you're saying no, even 5 minutes counts. Say more about that.
Right, because after 5 minutes, two things happened. Firstly, you will get out of paralysis analysis and you'll have more momentum and you'll actually want to finish it off. But even if you didn't, you still get 5 minutes more. And 5 minutes every single day of the week, that's 35 minutes. That's 150 minutes out of the month. Compare that to nothing. Pretty good, right? So it's all about getting the baby steps in. You know that even if you just, hey, I'm just going to watch Netflix for 5 minutes. Firstly, it's way more likely to turn into 30. But even if it's not, you can still finish a series of shows if you just dedicate a small amount for a consistent period of time. So whatever you can do consistently, that's what matters most.
And also, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you exercise for 5 minutes, you're not just getting the benefits of exercise in that 5 minutes. After that 5 minutes is over, aren't there some benefits physiologically?
Oh, 100%. Your energy improves. You have mental clarity. You're able to think a lot more clearly. If anybody is thinking right now, I have absolutely no time. I have 17 kids, 3 jobs, and can't do anything. I'm like, okay, do this. Every 29 minutes, set an alarm clock for you to exercise for 1 minute. So every 29 minutes, do a 60 seconds of exercise. This 60 seconds can be calf raises, squats, knee push-ups, wall sits, wall slides, anything. Just for 60 seconds. After 60 seconds, back to work. If you do that, if every 29 minutes you exercise for 1 minute, during a typical 8-hour workday, that's 16 minutes of exercise. Not bad. Doing a 12-hour workday, that's 24 minutes. Pretty solid. And you didn't waste any time. You actually made yourself more productive because taking that 60-second break allows you to reset and accomplish more once you get back into it. So the volume of what you do counts way more than when you do it, how you split it up.
Right. Okay. So doing 1 minute of exercise 8 times is probably better than doing, or is just as good as doing 8 minutes of exercise.
Yeah.
So, and then that could be 2 minutes of exercise once an hour, which
exactly. You
know, most things for 2 minutes. Yeah, I really like that sensibility because 2 minutes is doable. You could do almost anything for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I want to, again, invite anyone who wants to ask Daniel a question about your situation or exercise in general. The number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. And if you are watching on Instagram, feel free to drop a comment in the comment box and we will answer your question. Well, when I say we, I mean he. Okay. All right. So consistency, and I think you've already started to answer this, but consistency is often the biggest challenge on any fitness journey. Like you said, most people start January, it's January 2nd, January 3rd, and it's like, yes, I'm exercising, I'm dieting, I'm doing this. And then, oh, I don't know, maybe January 10th or February or March, it all fizzles out because it's impossible to stay consistent when you have these arduous goals. So how do you help people stay on track and maintain that consistency and that regularity?
Right. So everybody has a certain standard of what they'll do no matter what. everybody has a certain standard that no matter how pissed you get, no matter how angry you are, most people, they decide, I'm not going to be violent. Right? Most people have that standard. So most people have a standard that no matter how busy they are, no matter what happens, they'll still brush their teeth in the morning. No matter what, they'll do a certain thing. So what I encourage my clients is to raise that standard of no matter what, always do something. You can always get 1 minute of exercise every 30 minutes or even every hour. Right, you can always have a water bottle within arm's reach. Every time you talk on the phone, you can always walk. You can always take this little task that eventually add up. And I always say in regards to diet, if you can't stick with it for a decade, don't do it for a day. It's not about looking good for an Instagram picture, right? It's about sustainability. That's what matters most.
Yeah. And about how you feel as well, how you the energy that you have. Okay, so we have a question on Instagram. Wonders in Life is saying, what's the recommended balance between weight-bearing exercise versus cardio versus circuit training to help with metabolism and weight management goals?
Right. So ideally, obviously, you want to do a bit of everything. You don't want to completely neglect one aspect. But in terms of increasing metabolism and losing weight, I would definitely prioritize strength training. And that's because after an hour or 30 minutes of cardio and weight training, by weight I just mean like resistance, it can be push-ups, it can be bands, dumbbells at home, it can be anything, right? After 30 minutes of resistance training and 30 minutes of cardio, you'll burn the same amount of calories, but the difference is after the 30 minutes of resistance training, you would also break down your muscles and you'll build up your muscles, which require more calories to be burned in the future, because the more muscles you have, the more calories you naturally burn. Metabolism basically means you burn up more calories without doing anything. That's what it means when people say raise the metabolism. So the way you do that is by having more muscle mass. Right now, this doesn't mean you need to look bulky and look like a bodybuilder. This having stronger muscles will allow you to burn more calories while doing nothing. So that's why it's good to prioritize resistance training.
Right, strength training is so important. And also, women sometimes have the incorrect idea that weight training will make them build muscles and get bulky. And that normally just doesn't happen with women, right? We actually, you can gain muscle and get smaller.
100%. Because when you look more toned, then you look smaller, you look better in general, you feel better, you have more energy. And unless you're taking steroids, don't worry about getting too big. That's not going to happen.
Right. Okay. So for Wonders in Life, so metabolism, strength training, and weights just seems to be a priority, but also work in that cardio as well, but yes, prioritize strength training.
Yeah, I recommend walking as much as possible. Walking is probably the greatest form of exercise because you can always do it, and it's always nice outside, especially if it's hot like it is here. I'm in Arizona, there's lots of sun. Get some vitamin D inside of you. Walk as much as possible. Cardio doesn't have to be a marathon. It can be walking. Now you can do fast walking. You can even do a jog if you want. But getting something out will help. But I would say in terms of trying to lose weight, I would prioritize strength training and also try to walk as much as possible.
Yeah, I love that you recommend walking. Sometimes I walk so fast, my Fitbit tells me I've been running.
Hey, that's a good sign.
Awesome. Yes. But like my mom was one of those people who jogged every day, jogged, ran. And now she's got such terrible knee issues. Mm-hmm. And it's because of all that jogging, which is not to say that jogging is bad for you, but walking is probably, would you say walking is actually better than jogging, because jogging does jar your joints?
100%. I would always recommend, in terms of longevity and in terms of health, then walking is superior. Jogging is good if you want to get better at jogging. So if you're training for half a marathon or a marathon, then you should definitely jog. So I would say jogging is more of a performance exercise and walking is more of a longevity exercise.
Yeah, my mom was not training for any marathon. She was just out there exercising, right? Doing what she thought was the best thing for her. And now she walks. But okay, so these are great tips, and I especially like the time hack you have of doing 1 minute every hour, as opposed to thinking, okay, I've got to develop an hour to the gym, you know, which means really 2 hours by the time you drive there and you come back and you shower and you do all the things. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're a big fan of tracking what you eat and drink. Is that right?
Yes, especially initially, because I believe there's a huge gap between what people think they eat and what they actually eat. And the beauty of tracking is it helps you bridge that gap. Because if you ask people what they ate, they always remember the salad and they always forget about the donut. And if they track, they're able to give themselves more awareness. So it does two things. Firstly, actually three things. Firstly, it allows you to give more awareness. So be like, maybe I shouldn't take a picture because I don't want to show Daniel that I ate the donut. Secondly, tracking allows them to realize, be like, hey, I didn't realize this food has so many calories. I don't even like it that much. I'm not going to eat it. Hey, I didn't know this food has very little calories, high protein. I really love it. I'm going to eat more of it. So it helps you get into the category of tasty and healthy, which is the category you want to be at. A lot of people think they either have to eat foods that are healthy and taste awful, or foods that don't taste good but are healthy. Or things that taste good but are not healthy. So they feel like they have to compromise. But the idea is to primarily eat foods that are healthy and taste good. That way it's easy to remain consistent. And the last thing is, if you take pictures and track and let me know what you're eating, then I can help you out and give you more ideas as well.
And of course, you know, this has to do with when people are more resolved with their, as you know, I help people who struggle with emotional eating and binge eating and that kind of thing. And this is for like when that is a lot more resolved. So it's more about food. What you're actually recommending is an anti-diet plan. A diet plan is eat this and not that, which of course just sets people up for, you know, eating the thing they can't have, versus have what you discover what you like without good food or bad food, which leads to the, you know, the diet binge cycle. Okay, another question again from Wonders in Life. Is there really a consistent and broadly accepted method for quantifying what our individual resting metabolic rate is for ourselves? It seems like there are so many variables and factors that would impact this, including age, gender, weight, lean muscle mass, chronic health conditions, etc. Quite a question. Yes. So what are your thoughts about the question and about measuring that and about how to measure it? I guess there's two questions.
Right. So I would say, what problem are we trying to solve? Because I imagine that the person who's asking this, what they're actually asking is might not be directly what they're asking. So I feel like the answer, what they actually want to know is, how can I lose weight as efficiently as possible? Because even if I told you, hey, I have the perfect calculator to give you this exact number, it won't really do much for you. So whether there is an accurate method or not, I don't know, and I don't think that is relevant. I don't think that will actually help you. I think what would actually help the person who's asking is, how can I get sustainable hacks or habits inside of me that I can do whether I'm on vacation, whether I'm extremely busy, doesn't matter what happens, and I can sustain the weight loss forever. How can I implement those habits into my life? I think that's a better question. So,
that's very comprehensive and helpful, but he's clarifying. He says, I want to understand how much fuel my body needs, and how to understand what kind of calorie deficit I should be creating for myself to sustain, maintain sustainable and healthy weight loss.
Okay, that's a good question. So basically, what I'm getting at is, he wants to lose weight, but he doesn't want to starve himself, obviously, right? So I would say definitely, obviously every person is different, so I can't give you a number, right? But definitely try to do some sort of resistance training 3, maybe 4 times, even 5 times a week, and try to walk as much as possible and prioritize protein to make sure that you're giving your muscles the ability to recover and replenish, and focus on recovery, high quality sleep, which we'll probably talk about later. If you have that, then you'd have to honestly, unless like I know you and you tell me all the information, you'd have to test your calories. see how much calories work in the sense of, as you said, to lose weight without feeling like you're starving yourselves, right? Because if you starve yourself, that's not sustainable. So try it out, because I need to know your information for me to give you like something specific. But yeah, try it out. And ideally you want to eat like as much as possible and still lose weight as much as possible. Because if you feel like you're starving yourself, it's not sustainable. That's not the point.
And all right, so I guess the answer is there is no one size fits all.
Yeah.
Eat this amount of protein and this amount of carbs and this amount of whatever, like these are your macros for you. It really has to be individualized to a person. And I do know that, and this is one thing that I had to wrap my head around, which is that you have to actually eat more to build more muscle to get more fit. So many people are actually eating, it's hard to lose weight because they're not eating enough.
Exactly. Right? Counterintuitive to what other people think, but you can actually eat more. That's the beauty about knowing what to do and actually having a plan. You are able to eat more, you're able to enjoy yourself more, you'll be able to literally have more energy because food is literally energy. And you'll be able to be a lot more productive. It's all plus if you know what to do, if you have the roadmap. So, yeah, that's a really good point that you made. To build muscle, you actually need to eat more food, because without it, you won't be able to.
Yeah. And especially protein.
Yeah.
The protein is so important that, and it's often so neglected.
100%. That's the beauty about tracking. And I personally don't track anymore because I have been tracking, and my clients that have been with me for a year, they don't track anymore because they don't need to. But initially I do encourage it, because you probably have no idea of how many protein there is in chicken or how many calories there is, right? I can look at the food and I just have numbers in my head because I've been doing it for a while, but most people don't have any idea. So that's why I encourage tracking, and it allows you to find the foods that are high in protein, low in calories, and that you enjoy. And if you can prioritize those, for the most part, you'll be good to go.
Yeah, my husband went like a few weeks ago, so I used my fitness pal, and he had some sandwich from some place. And he's like, oh, I was so healthy today. I had a chicken sandwich. And I'm like, I wonder how healthy that was. So I looked it up on my fitness pal, and it was like 900 calories, 70 grams of fat. Like it was crazy.
Yeah.
Like your chicken sandwich was not healthy. It really is startling once you find out what's in the food that you're getting out in restaurants versus maybe the food we're cooking ourselves.
100%. Yeah. Again, that's what tracking is so important, because you do have no idea if you don't know, if you don't never tracked.
So would you say that's one of your non-diet healthy eating strategies? Like just figure out what you're actually eating first?
Yes, because otherwise you're just shooting in the dark. No idea what's going on. So it's good to just bring more awareness. And now my clients use a food scale or anything crazy like that. They use my own app, which is similar. I would argue slightly more advanced than my fitness plan in terms of tracking. And worst case, even if there's no barcode, even if you don't want to actually type it in, you can always send a picture, right? And the beauty about sending a picture is so many times they say, hey, I had 2 servings of rice. And then I look at the picture, I'm like, yo, that's at least 5. So that's why having somebody else to hold you accountable can let you know and allow you to be a little more accurate.
Right. So can you share, because everyone loves success stories, right? Can you share a success story of one of your clients who maybe was where some of the listeners are thinking, oh, I don't really want to exercise, or I can't, or it's just nothing's ever worked for me, but I'll give Daniel a try.
Okay.
What comes to mind?
So the first thing that comes to mind is I'm probably going to choose my very best client, and he's not a typical client, because I can't promise his type of results, because he's doing phenomenal. He started at 250 3 months ago, and he was extremely skeptical. He was extremely hesitant, but I told him that that's a great sign, because the more skeptical my clients, the better the results they tend to get. And it was definitely true with him as well. So like in 3 months, he lost 40 pounds, never stepped foot in the gym, is doing phenomenal, has way more energy than before. He said his family members can't stop like looking at him. His brother can't stop touching him because he's new, because he hasn't seen him in like a few months and looks like a whole different person. Everyone at work is asking questions, giving him compliments. So that's probably the first thing that comes to mind. And that's why I love doing this, getting on checking calls with my clients, because there's no better feeling than getting compliments about the fact that you shouldn't see people's lives, and they're getting compliments from strangers and people they work with all the time.
Yeah, and it's so heartening to think like that in only a few months, only a few months, you can actually make a dramatic difference without going on a dramatic diet and exercise plan that just takes up all your time and energy and money and, you know, all of that.
Yeah, he has two kids. One of them is a newborn, so he's a very involved father, works a hectic job, has a lot of things going on. That's why he's so skeptical. Be like, Daniel, I have no time. There's no way I can do this. I'm like, let's take it a step at a time. And because he saw such good results, he decided to take an extra, so I gave him 20-minute walks a day. He decided to walk for an hour. And that's why his results are so phenomenal, because when you see tangible results, you don't want to stop. So I always start slow and then speed it up. And I feel like most people start way too fast, do way too many things, fail, they feel miserable about themselves.
And there's also, oh, James is saying, thank you for today's insights and feedback. I have to leave for another appointment, wishing you well. So thank you, James. Thank you for your questions. And anyone else with questions, feel free to comment. What was I going to say? I have no idea. It will come back to me. Here's a question. How do you adapt workouts for people with different body types and fitness levels? So if someone has come to you and they've really never exercised at all, mm-hmm. and they're now, you know, feeling bad, they're out of shape, they can't even go up a flight of stairs without feeling out of breath, they're really hopeless, but motivated yet still. Mm-hmm. How do you approach that person as opposed to someone who was in shape but maybe kind of let it slide and now they want to get back into it?
Definitely. So like with everything, you can always adjust it. As an example, I can give a client push-ups, but if push-ups are an extremely easy exercise, I can tell them to do diamond push-ups with the hands close together. If push-ups are way too difficult, they can do knee push-ups or elevated push-ups where they put their hands on a wall or chair. So no matter what fitness level you are, adjustments can always be made. And if somebody is extremely unfit, I'm not going to give them an advanced exercise. And even people who, I mean, I have a client who started 297. I'll post his story when he's 180. I'm going to wait until he gets all the way over there. Right now he's like 250, right? But so I'm okay, no problem. But yeah, I want to work with people who are super beginner, hate exercise, are super new to this. Right, I don't care if you're 300 pounds and up, because I believe you can make the best transformations. And again, the way to do this is to take it slow. I'm not going to give you super intense exercises because I don't want you to feel like you fail. I want you to feel like you're winning every single day. It's little wins that stack up. So unless I know the person I know and I've seen what they can do and what they can't, I can't tell them exactly what exercise to do. But I start by giving them a pretty generic workout to begin with, and then I make it almost specific to them, where they have a knee injury or a shoulder injury, or they have a weaker body part than another body part. Everything can be adjusted.
And that's what I particularly like about your philosophy and your approach, because often, you know, people go to trainers and it's like, well, this is what you need to do, and this is how you're going to do it. Instead of, well, this is what we're doing for you, given your specific situation, level of fitness, time, motivation, age, all, you know, all the things. So it's so important.
100%. Imagine you went to a clothes store and they say, hey, Nina, you have to wear this dress with these heels, nothing else. They don't know what you're fashion. They don't know anything about you. And imagine they prescribed that to every person who's blonde. That's not fair. That's not accurate, right? So I believe if it's not customized, then you're just guessing. You're wearing somebody else's clothes. keto may work phenomenal for some people, may work horrendous for other people. So is keto good? It depends. I also try to be careful with the words I use because nothing is healthy. It depends on that specific person. What's healthy for one person can literally be poisonous to another person. It depends on their goals, it depends on the biology, the taste buds, what they're used to. So the answer to almost everything, the accurate answer is it depends.
Well, yes, and that's the best way to think about it, because otherwise people are trying to do keto right or do paleo right, and it's usually just not sustainable in the long run, and it may not be healthy for them. I had a friend who, when keto first started, or maybe paleo, whichever one it was, they were over for dinner, and her husband was like, you're going to lose weight, but you're going to have a heart attack because all you're eating is steak all day long. You know, how is this healthy? And she was getting distanced from her own ability to eat intuitively. She had no idea because this diet was telling her eat this and not that.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely don't believe in that approach for many reasons. One of which, I believe the entire purpose of fitness is to make your entire life better. It's supposed to enhance your social life, your work life, everything like that. It shouldn't make you be someone who is high maintenance. I feel like that's the worst, right? You don't want to be a high maintenance individual on either extreme. On one extreme, where you have to take blood pressure medications, you have to inject yourself with insulin all the time. You don't want to be that person. And also, you don't want to be the person who carries the food scale everywhere and has to measure everything and be like, hey, I can't eat this or that at a family dinner, right? You don't want to be a high maintenance individual. I don't believe that's a fun existence in general, right? It's supposed to enhance your possibilities. A big thing I encourage everyone is to think about diet as expanding rather than diminishing. Never say you can't eat anything, but you should always try new foods. Because I promise you, there's so many delicious, healthy foods that you don't know are delicious because you've never tried. Right? There's so many amazing foods out there, but you've never given a try. So every month, go to the grocery store, try a new fish, a new vegetable that you've never tried before. You might love it. I tried Brussels sprouts for the first time, loved it. I didn't even know it existed. I just thought, okay, let me give it a try, and it was amazing. So give more food a try and think about expanding your taste buds rather than trying to diminish and saying you can't eat this, you can't eat that.
And doesn't that also include, oh, I can't eat that dessert ever?
Yeah.
Because of course, the minute you say, well, I can't have that, then eventually you're going to want it because the anticipation or experience of deprivation just makes you want the thing you think you can't have or not allowed to have. And that's why the diet industry sets up the diet binge cycle. But
yeah, 100%. Nina, if I told you you can't push this button, you're not allowed to push this button, whatever you do, avoid pushing this button, what are you going to do? You're going to push the button most likely, yeah. Right?
Or so want if somebody- to. Or think about it all the time. I must
exactly. If somebody asks us, tells us we can't do something, we want to do it. If we tell ourselves, I can't drink alcohol, I can't eat donuts, all you want to do is binge, right? So avoid saying can't. I just say, I don't drink alcohol. I don't eat donuts. And even if I do, it's not a big deal. It doesn't define who I am. Okay, I ate a donut. I'm going to go back to eating healthy. It doesn't define me. So yeah. I never say never. There's nothing that you can't. That's completely off limits. Try to minimize things that are also processed, high in sugar in general, and try to prioritize things that are healthy, tasty for the most part.
Yeah. That is great advice. Okay, what about when someone has an injury? Like you were mentioning push-ups, and there used to be a time that I could do 35 push-ups.
Okay.
I was very proud of myself.
Nice.
But then I had an injury, or I think it might be bursitis or something, because I did break my wrist on Halloween night my freshman year in college at midnight. It's a long story, but anyway, it's now affecting me. And so now I can't put pressure, as much as I would love to do push-ups, I can't put pressure on my wrist at all, and nothing will help. So what do you tell someone like me who wants to do push-ups but can't do push-ups the way she used to?
Definitely. I also fractured my right wrist. Different story for another time as well. But I am a huge fan of bands because inexpensive, super versatile, and you can carry them anywhere. So with bands, you can lie on your back, assuming you want to work out your chest, and do a press-up right with the bands. Or you can do flies with the bands as well to target your chest as well, right? So they act as cables or dumbbells if you know where to put it and how to manipulate the tension, right? So with bands, you can work out pretty much your entire body, I would argue, if you know what you're doing and you plan it accordingly. So I would say that. And in general, for all wrist movements, I would say make sure that your wrist is neutral. You don't want to be like this because that puts so much pressure. So always have your wrist neutral in whatever position you do. Right? So doing a push-up might be difficult, but if you're able to either have handles or, I mean, fist push-ups might be difficult on your knuckles, but if you're able to have like handles that you put, then it might be easier on your wrist. So that's something that I would say works specifically for somebody with a wrist that isn't the best like you and me.
Well, I don't know. Can you beat my story of breaking my, it's my left wrist actually on midnight on Halloween in my freshman year in the dorms? I mean, I think it's kind of an unbeatable story.
I don't think I can beat your story now. I'm not going to try.
Okay. Oh, wait. Randy is saying, I use push-up stands with thick bar grips. It helps with keeping the wrist straight. Thank you. Okay. So that's what you were saying. Okay. Thanks, Randy. Thanks, guys. Now I can start doing push-ups again because I really loved doing push-ups.
Oh, yeah. Great exercise.
Okay. So let's say someone comes to you and they're like, yes, I'm ready. I'm ready to do this. Let's do this. Let's go, Daniel. And then they kind of peter out. They kind of run out of steam. And they go from, let's do this. I'm down for this. And then they're like, I can't do it. I just can't. I don't feel the motivation, Daniel. I just don't feel it. How do you get them motivated when they're at that place?
Definitely. Firstly, I get them to realize that right now it's August. From August to December, it's going to get colder. However, there might be a day in October that's hotter than a day in August. It might happen. The temperature isn't really going to go straight linearly down. There's going to be fluctuations in temperature. Same thing with your motivation. Same thing with your results. Even if you're headed 100% in the right direction, even if you're doing everything perfectly, your results won't always be linear. There's going to be ups and downs. Even if you're doing everything perfectly, your motivation isn't always going to be sky high. But planet Earth on October on a hot day doesn't stop spinning and say, the sun's a scam, seasons don't work, this isn't for me. No, it just keeps doing its own thing. So many times, changing nothing is the solution. If the Earth is like, hey, I'm going to try to turn it the other way, see if that works, that's not going to help, right? It goes around the solar system the exact same way, nothing changes. So many times, just get them to realize, hey, this is perfectly normal. There's nothing wrong with you if you're feeling down. People act differently when they have bad days or 10% days. But if you look at a bad day as a 10% day, then hey, every 10 days you have a 10% day. Every 10 days you're going to have a bottom 10%. Some days are going to be better than others. Doesn't mean you should change anything, right? So many times just keep going. And I also try to emphasize, hey, you lost 14 pounds so far. You're doing incredible. Sure, you plateaued for 2 weeks, but as long as you keep going, I promise you, you'll keep getting results.
All right, so that's really wise, because normalizing those bad days rather than trying to talk someone out of the bad day going, yes, you can get your motivation back, you know, just to be like, yeah, of course, you don't feel that way. We don't feel the same way every day. And I love your analogy about the weather. Exactly.
Like, yeah, of course your results are plateau. Of course you gained 2 pounds. It happens. The weather isn't always getting colder every single day. It happens. But if you keep doing the right thing, it will slowly get there. So expect fluctuations. That's completely normal. I can only think of one client that
his weight loss is linear, right? Because that doesn't happen often. It's always like this. But as long as the general trend is downwards, if you're trying to lose weight, then keep doing what you're doing.
Right. And our level of motivation is variable as well, to your point, yeah. That sometimes we're gung-ho and sometimes we're just,
I would say the key is because a lot of people try to beat the best, but I think it's more important for you to raise your standard of your worst. Because whether you're 80% motivated or 100% motivated, your workout is going to go from good to great, but the amount of calories you burn isn't going to be that different. But whether you do zero or you do something, that is going to make a big difference. So what you do when you're unmotivated matters a lot more than what you do when you are motivated. So improving your worst matters more than improving your best. So when you don't feel like doing it, that's the most important time to do something, just to keep the momentum going to your favor.
All right, so I have a question for all the women out there who are like, 50-ish, menopausal, or getting there, and all of a sudden their stomachs are no longer recognizable as their stomachs. It's like, what happened to our abs? And it's, they're not eating any differently. They're exercising the same. It's just like hormones. They're in hormone hell. And suddenly their stomachs are just not their stomachs anymore. What do you tell them?
Right. I say, whether it is your hormones or not, don't blame it on your hormones because you can't change it. So only blame things on things you can affect. When you say blame, think give power to. If I blame my pet or my hormones or the weather, I'm giving power to the weather, the pet, my hormones. They control me. So that's not a smart thing to do. So only blame things that you have absolute control over. So again, whether it's your hormones or not doesn't matter because you can't control them. So think about, what can I control? What can I improve upon?
So what do you say to someone who has the things that used to work no longer work, or, used to be able to lose weight a lot more easily, or just get toned or in shape a lot more easily, but the things that used to work aren't working and they haven't changed. They're not eating more. They're not doing anything differently. It's just their bodies are changing. What do you say to them?
Honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. The situation is more difficult than what it was before. But the good news is, the tougher the battle, the sweeter the victory. There's other people who started worse and made it out better. So it's still possible. We just have to be a lot more strategic about it. So yes, what worked before doesn't no longer work. However, it's still 100% possible. And it doesn't have to be a drastic change. Again, if you just walk 10 minutes more, eat slightly more protein, prioritize drinking more water, improve the quality of your sleep, different small things that on its own might not make a huge difference, but when stacked upon each other, then eventually do make a very big difference. So it's still possible. You might have to make a change, but hey, if you look incredible at 60, you'll get a lot more attention and a lot more praise than if you look good at 20. It's way more impressive. So because it's more impressive, it's more special, it's more unique, and be happy it's difficult, because that means not a lot of people are willing to do it. So you have the opportunity to be even more unique than you've ever been in your life.
And there you have it. Strategies to feel better about yourself, look better, and some like life coaching too, right? Some motivational coaching in there as well. Daniel, this has been such a pleasure talking with you and learning all of these life hacks and perspectives and all of that. Tell us, how can someone who's interested in working with you, how can they find you? How can they reach you? And I thought you were in Canada, not Arizona.
I'm actually going to a conference with other big fitness influencers, so trying to up my game. So yeah, I'm
traveling. Okay, awesome. But normally you're in Canada, right?
Yep.
No. Yes. Okay. All right. So how can people find you? No matter, because you treat people all over the world. You help people all over the world.
Yeah, time zones doesn't matter. I have people all over the world, so it doesn't matter at all. So doesn't matter where you're hearing this from. You can reach me at my website, danielrizafit.com. That's danielrizafit.com. And I'm most active on Twitter or X, And I promise you, it's not just politics. It's not just people yelling at each other. There's a lovely side of fitness Twitter. Check it out. My username is DanielRuz_fit. And I'm going to be promoting this show on Instagram at DanielRuzFit for the next couple of weeks. I used to be reactive on that, but I found the most success on Twitter. So when you have things working for you, double down. Same thing with your diet, same thing with your fitness. So again, check me out, DanielRuz_fit on Twitter. I think you like what you see.
Well, I like what I heard today, Daniel. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you all for tuning in. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, psychoanalyst, here to help you create a binge-free, happy life. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio, or you can listen later wherever you get podcasts. And definitely check out Daniel. He has a lot to say. And as you can see, he's just a really good guy who wants to help. So thank you, everyone. Have a great week. Stay curious, not critical. And remember, you are perfectly imperfect. If you're seeing this, you can see my perfectly imperfect cup. You are perfectly imperfect. So take good care of your perfectly imperfect self. See you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.